as a disclaimer, I know nothing about food, I know nothing about marketing. But I heard today a lot of people talking about how you make people decide eat good food, bad food, what is the hot ingredient, whatever. I didn't hear anything about how you can make people eat less. And this is actually, I don't know, maybe it's not practical. That's why I have it. And that's the trick, you know. Living in Los Angeles area part of the time, there was legislation. Actually, I don't know if it's passed or in the process of passing. Governmental agencies, they want to ban the toys that McDonald's sells with the Happy Meal. So McDonald's sells the Happy Meal. This is the Happy Meal with the toy. And, you know, it's a marketing gimmick. Well, they want to ban the toy. So I kind of looked at that. Why they want to ban the toy? Can you offer people that choice? You can have the Happy Meal as a Happy Meal versus half of it. It doesn't matter what kind of food you're offering. I don't have to worry about that. Just get half of it plus the toy. Will the brain take that? Now, we have to realize that not all people are the same. There are some people who are health conscious to begin with. They probably don't even go to McDonald's. You don't have to worry about those. There are, on the other extreme, people, no matter what you do, nothing is going to work. You can offer them a Ferrari over here, and they'll still turn it down. You know, they just want the big hamburger. But there's always people in the middle. And a trick like this can sway some people, maybe not all of them. But the question is, well, if you're swaying a certain percentage of the people, does that eventually, ultimately translate into something beneficial at the societal level? Now, why do we have that? Well, that's where neuroscience comes. There is a neuroscience trick to this. What is that trick? There are chemicals in the brain. There are a whole bunch of other chemicals, but one in particular, chemical called dopamine. And there are many systems of dopamine in the brain. The dopamine does many other things. One of them, for example, has to do with motor movement. People who suffer from Parkinson's disease, they get a destruction in a specific dopamine pathway called the nigrostriatal pathway. And what drugs and therapies are all about are about restoring that dopamine deficiency and that you can alleviate Parkinson's. But one of the pathways, and this is what we call the mesolimbic dopamine system, is just the system, the chemical system of the brain is the same dopamine, but it works in different areas of the brain. You know, one key area is called nucleus accumbens. And this system has been studied for over 35 years now. And that's the system that really drive behavior towards things that are very rewarding. They are powerfully rewarding. Drugs is one example. So addiction, one key aspect of addiction is really overstimulation or overactivity in this mesolimbic dopamine pathway. Pathological gambling, people who gamble a lot, they do that. And we knew for a long time that this system works to drive the choices toward rewarding things. But this system works not just for one thing, it works for many things. That's why I said here there is a common currency for reward in the brain, because reward can be in many different forms. It can be a Ferrari, it can be a hamburger, it can be money, it can be anything. And the brain, the way the brain deals with all of that, it converts it to a very common currency. And that's the chemical dopamine. So no matter what you're dealing with, eventually the brain interprets this in one kind of chemical, just to make it simplistic. And we knew this for a long time. So, you know, this is since the late 80s that drugs, different kinds of drugs, because all those drugs are not the same. Opiates, alcohol, nicotine, you know, cigarettes, caffeine, we're all having all of it. all of those different drugs, they all, although they work on different receptors, they have separate systems and so on, eventually they all come down to the same place. They're all converted to this dopamine. But not only that, we knew that the system works not only for chemical stuff like drugs, but it also works for natural stuff like food. The same system reacts to food, especially high-calorie food, sweet drinks, sex. So everything that is rewarding in nature ends up activating the system. Everything is being converted to dopamine. And we learned, this is a little bit more recent, you know, that movement of neuroeconomics and so on, because a lot of that other works was done primarily in animals. But now with the advent of functional neuroimaging in general, we know that that same system will respond to a lot of the things we're talking about here. Money, it responds to money. It responds to valuable objects like cars, houses, toys, if you're a kid. Even things like altruism, you know, if you donate to charity and feeling good about it, so all of this gets converted to the same currency. So what this means then, one trick, one way you can fool the brain is to substitute one kind of reward for another one, because they all end up being dopamine. Why not exchange them? And this trick was tried also in the old days. This is being tried in the addiction treatment, and it's called contingency management therapy. And basically, if you take a drug addict, if you bribe them to forego an injection of a drug, they'll take the money. You know, you can bribe them with other rewards. So the therapy works. The problem with this whole therapy, it was never practical in addiction, because who the hell is going to keep paying the drug addicts? Yes.
Did the addicts habituate to the payments?
I don't think it was kept long enough. But yeah.
I mean, you would, right? They would probably have to keep upping the payments.
Yeah, so that's one point. Sure, you're going to get good with that. So that's why this was never practical, but it worked in principle, and that's why. That's basically, who's the hell is going to keep paying them and even raising the stakes? But we're not talking about drugs. We're talking about food. Will this work with foods? You don't have to pay anybody. All I'm saying is that whatever industry you are, because you're not gonna shut down McDonald's. So McDonald's, they can keep their Happy Meal. It's only they offer another choice, that is half that meal, half the size, but there is a bribe with it. There is a toy. I mean, this can be done in a restaurant on a menu. You can have the big full plate menu, but you have half the size of that menu with something else that is non-food. Now, there are two questions for this. There are still some research that needs to be done to work out the neuroscientific tricks in here, but also there are work that has to be done with marketing people, you know, practitioners. Because I don't know if this idea is really practical. Does it work? Will McDonald's make a profit? Will they have an incentive to do it? You know, you have to work out the marketing part of that. And that's where my idea of two fields collaborating together. Because I've been in this business, because this buzz about multidisciplinary research started about 10 years ago. And I've been in it for about 10 years ago. And what a lot of people try to do is that put two people together. One is a physicist and the other one is an anthropologist, and say, well, brainstorm each other and come up with something together. Nothing comes out of it. I mean, many, many times I get lawyers who come who want to work with neuroscience. They tell their stories, 90% of it glance over my head. I may probably get 10% of it. And vice versa. So this thing never works. But it can work if, and this is something we try all the time with what we call center grants. That is, you have individual projects. You have expertise in those different projects. Each one is doing their thing independently, but there is a common theme in the middle, and that is the overall product. The product from all those four or five of different disciplines, different projects, they produce something that is holistic and that is above and beyond what you get from an individual product. Well, that's my idea, that this is something that I'm a neuroscientist, I can work out the neuroscience of this. Marketer, you know, can work out the practicality of this, but there is still science to be done, because this is not all done. Because there are certain things we know, it's already been done in neuroscience, and we don't want to redo it together. We know that dopamine responds to reward. We know that different rewards release dopamine, so it's the same currency. But we don't know what I just told you. I don't know if half hamburger plus toy equal large hamburger. But this is doable. This is doable in a controlled experimental setting. We don't know, for example, because you can play around with what kind of reward you can put here. You know, a toy works for a kid, but I don't know what works for an adult. Maybe money, maybe coupon. Yeah. So these things are doable, and this is empirical. You know, it can be done, and you can get results do it. So this is an area that needs to be worked out, and there are a lot of room to do, you know, fMRI and neuroscience and all that stuff. But at the same time, you need the marketing people to work in parallel. Is this practical? And now this is something probably works for a McDonald's and may work in a restaurant menu, but I don't know how we can apply this to, I don't know, people buying stuff from the store. You know, I don't know if you want to make them buy a half or just, it's a question of at the end, you know, don't eat too much of it. So there are a lot of issues, but these things can be done in parallel, so I don't have to sit with the marketer and try to understand everything they do, and they don't have to sit with me, read scans about nucleus accumbens and ventral striatum and mesolimbic dopamine, but there is a common goal, and I think that's one way of two fields basically coming together. Now, there are other ways. This is just one of the ways. It's not the only way. Other ways is that sometimes you know something in one particular field, but you apply parallel strategy in another one. For example, I've never worked with food in my life, but I worked on issues on addiction, issues of brain damage, decision-making, but I can take what I learned from there and I'm trying to apply it to a new discipline, food. You know, I treat food like a drug, for example. People have done that, even in neuroeconomics. You know, what one of the movement in neuroeconomics, what they argued is that we know a lot about economics, because economics is a well-established field, and how dynamics work, you know, different populations, different forces, you know, that drive a certain thing. And they say, well, we're going to apply it to the brain. So it's the opposite way of what I like. They say, well, now let's treat the brain like an economic organ. That is, you know, you have different brain areas, you consider them as different countries, they're different things, and then let's apply that, and then we can understand the brain better. Now, I disagree with that because we know a lot more about the brain than you think. It's probably an older field, historically existed a longer time. The opposite approach would be probably better is if you take neuroscientific knowledge and try to apply it to economic context. At least this is, but at least the example is there. That is, you take knowledge from one field and you know, you try to apply it in another field. So this is one of the attempts. Of course, there's nothing you can take out of this right now and go sell something, you know, make money out of it. This is more of an academic exercise, but at least it's a way of kicking off the conversation.